This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is an edited recording of the panel session at the recent BFM Health and Living Junior 2017 event.
Okay, in conjunction with World Obesity Day that just happened about 3 days ago, I think BFM would like to address this issue pertaining obesity in children, because in recent years, we have been seeing collectively more and more children who are hitting the upper limits of normal, and some are frankly obese. We're lucky to have with us today Ms. Mary Iso, Senior Manager in Dietetics and Food Services in IJN, Associate Professor Dr. Yazid, he's the Head of Department, as well as Consultant Pediatric Endocrinologist from UMMC, and Katiana Azman, a Child Psychologist from Pantai. Now, without wasting too much time, I think we should get into the nitty-gritty of things, okay? Prof. Yazid, how big is this problem in Malaysia?
If we look at the general Malaysian population, just look at the adults. Adults means those who are above 18 years. About 47% of our adults are either overweight or obese. And before this, the National Health and Mobility Survey do not have much data for children. Only 10 years back that Malaysia had one nice data for national prevalence of overweight obesity. And at that point in time, in 2006, we think that we only have like 5% of our children below 18 who are obese. But in 2011, yes, it was said to just be 6%, but in 2015, it became 11.9%. So in just 10 years, we doubled the number. And that is for children below 18 years, all right? And there are quite a number of data that's coming up through different group of researchers. One is, you can see there, the CNUT study that looked at the children between 6 months to 12 years. We note that overweight obese in about 1 in 5 of our children below 12 years. Put together the overweight and obesity, 1 in 5. When we look at adolescent, it's worse. Adolescent mean 13 to 18 years. People go and research adolescent in schools throughout Malaysia. And that comes to about 33 to 35% of our adolescent who are overweight and obese. So all in all, when we talk about overweight and obesity in Malaysia, we are seeing drastic changes over the last 10 years. And WHO just came up with the result that they did with the Imperial College London. In 1975, overweight obese children were only 11 million in the world. And in year 2015, the number was 126 million. So mostly, especially in the last 10 years, they actually come from the East Asia, South Asia, and Southeast Asia, where we are. So we are at a high risk when we talk about all this.
That sounds like a lot of children with obesity.
A lot of children with problem of weight issue, overweight and obese. And not just that, Malaysia only have about 65% of our children who are in a normal weight. Because we have 25% overweight obese, and we have 10% who are still malnourished. That's something that we have to really think about, because it costs a lot of medical issue, may not be now, but probably in the next 5-10 years.
How would you define obesity in the pediatric population to get these numbers?
Okay, for definition of obesity in pediatric, it's not like adult. Adult, you can just pick up 25 kilograms per meter squared. If you want to use certain criteria, you are already overweight obese. Malaysians, we think that we are not 25. We want 27. We want 30 as overweight obesity. But for children, you need to follow certain rules. There is this BMI chart under the World Health Organization that is accepted worldwide. There's a percentile for it. Above 85th percentile, you are considered overweight. Above 95th percentile, it is considered obese. The issue is that most of the parents do not know, because no one sits with you and calculate for you the BMI and chart for you the BMI. You tend to think that my child looks all right. Where we did this kind of study in our center, looking at perception of parents, do you think that your child overweight or obese? 60 to 70% of parents do not think that their child is either overweight or obese, because they think the child is healthy and well. Good food, healthy. Little bit chubby, fine.
Cute.
Yeah? But then they actually already fall into that group of overweight children.
Is there a race distribution? Has your studies shown any breakdown?
Yes. Previously, I think I started doing all this study because we started obesity clinic 10 years back. Previously, we always thought that the Indians has the highest number, the Malays has the highest number of overweight obesity. But the more recent data from the breakfast study have shown that the Chinese do not want to lose. So everybody is at the same pace, all right? Everyone, almost between 12 to 13% for each different races. So every single different ethnicity in Malaysia, we are on the race to be the most obese, but which I think we should not be going there.
Do you think it should be classified as a medical condition then?
If you ask me, is obesity a medical problem? I would. Because if you look at the adults, problem with cardiovascular disease, heart disease basically, stroke, high cholesterol, blood pressure, kidney disease, diabetes, mostly are related to obesity. Okay? I have started obesity clinic for the last 10 years in my center. We are the only one that has pediatric obesity clinic in Malaysia. Over the last 10 years, we have obese patients comes under us. We always park type 2 diabetes in children as the long-term effect of obesity. Long-term means after 10, 20 years. But I can tell you, those children under my follow-up who are obese from the age of 1, 2, they are already diabetic when they are 10. They are in their early teens. Diabetes in children, 80% in Malaysia are type 1 diabetes, the one that needs insulin injection. However, in the last 3 years in UMMC, I can tell you that type 2 diabetes new cases overpowered our type 1 diabetes new cases. We are seeing more new cases of type 2 in children than the type 1 patient. And most of the time, they are between 10 to 15 years. They all come with all sorts of problems related to type 2 diabetes. And it's not a play kind of thing, yeah? This is kind of like things that I'm telling you what I'm experiencing. And it's really something that all of us can do. All of us can do something to help to curb this obesity problem. And when we talk about obesity, we are not just talking about obesity. We are talking about heart disease. We are talking about cholesterol issue. We're talking about diabetes. We're talking a lot of things. When I started housemanship 20 years back, when we see a patient at the age of early 40 come in with heart attack, we were like, wow, so young, 40 got heart attack already. Now, those that gets into our CICU are in their late 20s or mid-20s having heart attack. So where does all this come from? It must have started very early.
Okay, going on from the heart attacks, I think that's where they end up. After they graduate from you, they go to IJN with all their heart problems. So perhaps Mary would like to elaborate more on what you see in terms of dietary practices amongst Malaysians. I'm sure you've seen a lot.
I'm so glad Prof gave all those statistics, so it's easier for me. I actually go into practice, and when I first started this, the question is, who do you blame? Malaysians got this habit. No, so I'm okay, but I send to my mother-in-law's house, got problem. Then don't send la. But who's going to look after my daughter? See, this is the issue, number one. Number two is, the first 1,000 days of their life is very important. Okay, what does that mean? The day the mother decided to have a baby, conceive, right? And then when the child goes in the first year, 365 days until year two, this is it. We got to get it right. But when we say we get it right, I don't want you to become super different. Go back to basic. Meals on time. See, during your pregnancy, don't try to take things which you should not take. For example, I have a mother who came to me and she was actually quite well, but she was a little underweight. So she said, can I take the supplementary drinks? I said, no need. You simply don't ask for trouble. She said, but my baby is not growing as big as she should be. I said, never mind. The natural growth. What did your ONG tell you? Growing, but not as what he expects. So be very clear when we find out what it is. But you know, she had a normal delivery and she delivered a very nice, beautiful child, a little underweight. But if you see the girl now, you'll never believe it's her. And I told her, you calm down, don't mess it up, don't mess her life, don't mess her cells. She said, what do you mean? Don't give supplement, nothing. Number two is, in the first 6 months, breastfeeding is compulsory lah. And I must congratulate the Malay mothers lah. Okay, they can do it very well. So you need a help of a lactation consultant to help you if you're not good at it. Not everybody is good at it. Of course, there's the job, and many of these companies now give you enough place to breastfeed your child, or you know, get the milk and all that. Then comes the big issue, the 6 months boundary. So once the child is 6 months, what do you think you should give? Not going to the shop. You are eating Hokkien Mee and you put one piece Hokkien Mee into the child's mouth. And I have seen this done. Oh my God. You know what they do? They take the straw, put the bundle, and then zoop onto the child. And so what is the first food you gave? Oily, sweet, salted. The other thing is they leave it at the nursery or at the babysitter. Don't get upset if I say this sentence. When you plan to have a baby, you don't plan during the pregnancy only. And please don't tell your dad and mom to look after your children. They didn't bring the child to the world. You guys did. You need to take care of the child. For example, I decided I have one child. So my daughter tells me, why no friend? I say, one child, late marriage, one is enough. And it's enough. She's 17 now. So you have things. So you need to decide how many kids you want and how you're going to handle them. You know, we have dietitians in the country. We have doctors. We have nurses, educators. You actually can go to any one of them and ask, am I doing the right pathway? Is this how I'm doing it? And many of the mothers now are next-gen mothers. Wow, never seen food, anything. Everything must be in the tablet or in the bottle. Can I give this to my child? Can I give this liquid? I say, where did you get this liquid from? Let me read the thing. Because sometimes you don't even know. So you have to be very careful what you do. Another thing, the other problem I found, that normally we don't let our children run because of the safety issue. Okay, so the exercise part of the kids are gone. You know why allergy is on the rise? Besides obesity, children all in the house. And how many times do you put the bed out in the sun? But the other thing is, what do you think is the first food that you should give a child? 6 months. Tell me.
Any volunteers from the flock?
Malaysian, porridge. Okay, fine. I mean, it's okay. Nothing wrong with it. We are staple food. It is not a 3-course or 5-course meal. Yeah, that is the problem. Chinese moms must eat one bowl of porridge with the meat. You didn't finish. I say, excuse me, only 4 tablespoons or 4 teaspoons. That's all. The stomach's so small. How to eat the big bowl? Doesn't make sense, does it? Oh, yeah. But my neighbor's child eats more. I said, never mind about the neighbor's child. You concentrate on your child. Sorry, this is in practice, you know, that's how I speak. Nothing personal. And Malay mothers, they're very polite. They said, I think it's like that. I said, no, you cannot think. This is your child's. I think my babysitter gives like that. So you need to really know where you want to put the child, what you're going to do. I still remember one of the mothers asked me, hey, when I'm traveling, can I give baby food in the jars? Yes, you do. You no need to make your porridge. Excuse me. You make the porridge, where do you put? 6 hours from here to Penang. Sure, the child take the porridge, tomorrow food poisoning. How many hours? That is the time you actually take those little jars and little tubes. And then when you take it, you just scoop it and put it into a little bowl, close it up and keep it in a cooler box, because until you reach there. It is correct. It's very, very clean and very, but that doesn't mean don't get angry. Some of the mothers are a bit lazy. They think that, okay, I have that, I can give. So the child seemed to, hey, this food is different from the type my grandmother, the babysitter gives me. And one more thing, when you introduce new food, you introduce in parts.
This is an edited recording of the panel session at the recent BFM Health and Living Junior 2017 event.
I still remember once the hospital asked me, Mary, you have to go to Bangladesh, Dhaka. I said, for what? I'm not going to any of those places. Hey, it's safe, Mary. You have to go and promote IGN. I said, fine. So I was going with fear factor. Okay? Because I've never been to Bangladesh. So my husband asked me this question, why? India can, Bangladesh cannot, You know? That hit me straight. Yeah, why not? They're quite similar. So the first time when you give a child something, the child has never seen it. What is this my mom is giving me? Somehow the spoon, have you seen the spoon, sir? It comes like tarang, like a tank. You know, that the child will look like, you watch their face. I've watched this all in my nephews and nieces, you know, and they look like that. So when you bring the spoon, bring a small spoon, no need to bring a big spoon. You know, and another thing they do is they put a lot of these toys. And what do you expect the child to do? Look at the toys, look at the mother, look at eating. Hey, hello. So now you tell me, my child cannot sit still. You made it.
Well said, Mary. Okay, the other dilemma mothers have is like, you want me to feed healthy food? That's sedap. It's not tasty. Is there a way to make healthy food tasty, or is it always healthy food?
Okay, in your concept, what is not healthy?
To me, anything that's balanced, like carbohydrate, proteins, fats, vegetables, and to me, it's healthy because, and it is tasty because that's what I eat. But how do we change this notion?
Okay, doctor, before I go to that, normally I tell the mothers when they're doing the 6 months turnover, all you have to do is very simple. You have carrots, you have pumpkins, you have spinach, you have all this. Steam it, mash it up, give la. But the child will show some face. There is two ways to look at it. In Asian context, it's always mother's feeding, mother-led. But in the Western context, it's baby-led. So I tried this too on my daughter. During my pregnancy, I was cow-cow Indian food. I love Indian food. I mustn't see any other food. But my daughter now does not eat one food called Indian. So I sat down and read some papers. What happened? But I like what my daughter say. No, la, ma. Jalla, la. When I was in you, jalla. So it does, I'm just sharing a joke with you. Sometimes you are not sure whether your child likes or not. So what they do is they put a paper down, put it in the child properly. Hello, don't leave the child alone. You put some mash, pumpkin, you put some mash. In it. So let her or him use the hand, use all the system to enjoy. It is messy, but put a paper down. After that, just wash him up or wash her up. And the texture is very important for babies to start. When you first start, it's puree. After puree, must get into lumpy. Yeah? After lump, must get into mince. Then chop. Then bite pieces, bit pieces. Mothers tell me, my child is 1 year, still porridge. I say, it's your fault. Why didn't you put him in the adult and ask them to eat together? They will just play around, but they will get it. How do you do the transition? Now, you go back to your parents. You think they went through all this education. But you're eating normally, isn't it? So it's back to basics. That's why I tell. What's a balanced diet? In the kids' time, you need to make sure they have enough iron. After 6 months, breast milk itself is not sufficient. So sometimes you need to cook spinach, you can cook. Okay, some of the mothers ask me, what about this ready-to-eat cereals, you know, for babies? I don't advocate that so much, but in order to give a variety for the child's taste bud, once a week you can give. That means you give variety. For example, maybe you can give, when they're about 9-10 months, you can give chopped mihun soup. All very finely chopped. Or you can give soft rice with minced meat. All these are allowed, but you must see the stages. The problem is if you don't do the stages, the child will never think there is something called choppy or hard. You get what I mean? Are you sleeping? Are you okay? Okay, thank you.
They're listening with rapt attention, trying to absorb
so quiet.
The germs. What about when they get older, though? When they are like 6 or 7 years old, it's not so easy to get them to eat what we want them to eat. At that time, it's like, Mom, I don't want this. Mom, I hate this. How do
you
we
are
get
very
around
right.
that?
Peer pressure. They're going to school. One of my friends did this. I want to share with you. The son says the tuck shop food is better. Tuck shop is the school canteen food. It's better. Okay? Deal. Twice, you eat the tuck shop food. 3 times, mommy pack. So this is how you have to do. Not like those days parents say, I'm packing, you're eating. Correct or not? Now you cannot say all like this. So this was the agreement. That's number one. So you still give that little naughty part of it, but you still control. Number two is drinks. Huh? The problem with children nowadays is a lot of, sweetened drinks and, carbonated drinks. Okay, I want to tell you a trick that I did and it works well. But it worked well for my daughter. The first time she asked me for carbonated drink, I shook the whole bottle, right, the can. And then I told her, you can have the drink. She said, why you shake her, mommy? She said, no, you have to shake it a bit. See, the moment she drank, it was so gassy, it went through her nose and she started choking. She asked me, what is this? That's why I told you, don't take all this, it's not good. Now, today, she doesn't drink that, but if she wants to drink, it's very funny. She'll ask me, can I take one since you tricked me some time ago? I said, yeah, you can. But you still have to give them preferences. And please don't tell children chocolates are bad. This is bad. What is bad becomes their love. Be very careful. And when you eat in the table, don't talk negative about food. I still remember one of my friends, we went to the house and the daughter said, I said, aren't you eating vegetable? Oh, see my daddy's face. So I looked at her husband's face. Mary, don't look at my face. Why? Because anytime the vegetable is served, the face goes haywire. So because daddy's face is like that, I don't eat. It's a good observation, you know. Actually, we adults are sometimes the cause for all this mess, you know. And I've learned that through my daughter, and I've learned that through my nephews and nieces. So I'm very cautious in front of them now.
That's very interesting. My son used to barter trade his food.
Oh, really? Okay. That's another example.
To get his friends' cookies. What about when they reach puberty, though? When they hit puberty, when they're about 14, 15?
God help you. You know why? It's already when they are in that form 3, form 4, and they decide on what. So I remember one of the time my daughter says, I don't want to be fat, mummy, because you are a dietitian. Fair enough. But I said, you cannot be anorexic also, right? So we have to educate them. Nah. So that age, you can talk to them. She's not a rice person. So I said, what do you want? I like bread. I like noodles. Okay, fine. It's still carbohydrates. I have a mother, a Chinese mummy, who came to me and said, I'm so upset. You know, I said, why are you so upset? My child doesn't eat rice. I said, what does she eat? Oh, she eats pasta. She eats rice noodle. I said, they are carbohydrates. But, you know, we are Chinese. Where got Chinese don't eat rice? Don't have this preconceived ideas, you know, must eat rice, Indian must eat curry. Now Indians don't eat curry, yeah? Chinese are eating curries. So you really have to think like that, you know, it doesn't happen that way.
How do you tie the two, that the increasing rate of obesity that is seeing amongst teenagers and this food fad amongst teenagers that you are seeing? How could this come about? If they are picky about their food, why are they getting obese?
Sorry, they are picky about that good food. Yeah. They love to drink. They won't drink coffee and toast bread in Kopitiam. Oh, Starbucks, fantastic.
Oh, okay.
But the content of the sugar and the calories in that coffee versus the other one is significantly different. But it's the environment and not. Nowadays, kids don't go to mama shops and all this. They don't. They like cafes. Right? So in the cafe, you have to find out what food they serve. I tell you, most of the cafes my daughter go, I also follow once, la, first time, you know, to see what they sell. She tell me, Ma, are you going to do this? I say, I just want to see what they sell. You'll be very shocked what they serve. High calorie desserts, drinks with cream, so salty, the noodles or the spaghetti, lots of cheese and cream. But this is what makes their taste bud happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we are lousy cooks, la. That's what they're trying to tell us.
Are obese children likely to be children of obese adults, or are obese adults more likely to have children who are obese?
When we talk about obesity in children and in adults, there are lots of studies now to show that if you're an obese child, when you are about during the kindergarten period, about 5 to 6 years old, there is a 4 times risk that you become obese adults later on. But if you're an obese adolescent, it's 7 to 8 times the risk that you become obese adult. So it's not easy for you to lose that weight when you are already obese when you're young. Second, this study again showed to us that if one parent, if the father or the mother obese, there is 4 to 5-fold times that they will have a child who's going to be either overweight or obese. But if both parents are either overweight or obese, 13 times more chance that their child will be overweight or obese. I mentioned to you just now, overweight obesity in Malaysia among adults about 47%. But you are not in your 20s anymore, right, most of you? But you're still making babies when you're 30 to 40s. Reproductive age group. These are the people who make babies. This group of people in Malaysia, about 65 to 75% of them are either overweight or obese. That 47% that I said to you are between 18 to 70 years old. But if we just zoom into the group that actually making babies, 75% of them are overweight or obese. If 75% of parents are either overweight or obese, no wonder the babies and the children are now very overweight, obese. And that comes in with the issues of metabolic programming. A mother who gives birth to a child is not just giving birth to that child. The mother also gives birth to the grandchild. It goes to the next generation. Very importantly to note that a mother who is pregnant should not be underweight and should not be overweight. Should not overfeed because of all those issues that you see. That's why the pregnancy weight gain is very important. And then the first 6 months of life, breastfeeding, very important. If you overdo, just because your baby was born small, somebody tells you, how come your baby is small? Your neighbor's baby is big enough. This all neighbor and nephews and niece, please don't listen to them. It's your own, it's your genetic process. So they follow your genes rather than follow the neighbor's genes, okay? So take care of your own baby. When they are born small, but you overfeed them during that 6-month period, they will just go on and they will have all those issues. It's not easy, as I said, 4 times to 5 times risk, even if they are just in the preschool. If they are overweight, obese at that time, the risk they become obese adult is about 5 times. I'm sure all of us at one point has been a little bit overweight or obese, and we have been trying to lose that weight. Yes, we managed to lose during fasting time for the Muslim. After a month of fasting, 2 kilograms lost. After a month of Raya, you gain 5 kilograms. Because it's always the fact that our brain wanting to keep that level that is so-called suitable to us. And it's not easy for you to keep your weight when you are already losing weight. To keep that weight for the next few years, it's not easy.
Tatiana, are there any psychological reasons for a child to become obese? And what are the impacts psychologically on a child who's obese?
Basically, when a child comes into this world, I like to tell parents, it's like when you buy a hard disk at the store for the first time and it's like completely blank slate. So when babies come into the world, there's been a lot of research that goes into what drives human behavior. And in babies, it's about survival. So it's about food, safety, sense of security. Those are the things that drive them. But with what types of food we are introducing to them, that very much falls upon the parents or the caregivers. You know, when we talked a little bit about how your friend's husband's face changed with the vegetables, one of the biggest areas that people are looking into now is about parents' perception towards food. And so kids actually learn. There are a lot of children out there who say, I don't like this type of vegetable, I won't eat this particular type of food, even though they've never had it before. Because one, it's not available in the house because mom and dad don't like it, so they won't buy it. And so as such, they're not exposed to it. A lot of the psychological factors, yes, when children come into the world, they are very much a blank slate. And so we do have a very big role towards cultivating their attitudes towards food, their inclinations to try new things. That's also something that a lot of parents talk to me about, is that their child doesn't want to try new foods. They're quite set in the types of foods they want to eat. And the core way of changing that is to give them more experience with food. Have them in the kitchen, have them involved in prepping food, expose them to different types of food through games, through, there's a lot of very inventive ways you can find on the internet now, but the core of it is essentially the same, is that they are just driven to eat, sleep, feel safe. That's basically what drives them when they're infants. The rest of it falls upon us.
A lot of times, adults bribe children or reward children mm-hmm. with food. If you don't cry when you see the doctor, that would be me, I'll give you a chocolate.
Yeah, I have a jar of cookies outside my office too.
Oh dear. So. Okay, I give stickers.
Yeah.
But can that actually impact the child in terms of thinking of food as a reward rather than as necessary sustenance?
I know a lot of parents use what we call positive reinforcement. So that's what you're saying. We reward a child for good behavior, reward a child for doing something well or achieving something with candy or with ice cream or with McDonald's. That reward system is very effective because children learn through actions when they're younger. If you're trying to sit down your 3-year-old and explaining to them McDonald's is really unhealthy, you got to eat your vegetables, it's not coming through. And a lot of that is due to the fact that neurologically, they're not 100% developed. The frontal part of your brain is the part that continues to develop until you're about 30. And that's the part of your brain that controls things like emotional regulation, logical thinking, all the parts that make you a responsible adult. And so you need to introduce what we call these behavior techniques, you do this, you get this, in order to cultivate behavior. So to answer your question of whether using food as a form of reward, I personally am not 100% against it, provided that parents are very aware of the guidelines involved in creating this system, in that you don't give them the candy just to keep them quiet, you don't give them that just to take them off your hands kind of thing. Use it in a very structured way, in that they have to achieve up to a certain amount in order to get it, and that it's not the big bulk of the reward. So you can have candy or you can have playtime outside, you know, mix it up a bit. Don't make it all about the food.
I'm sure there are many in the audience who are dying to ask questions, so a panel of experts. Oh yes, I see a hand there.
I've got a few questions. One of it is, there is this guide saying that you should eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. So your advice on that. And my second question would be, is breakfast the most important meal of the day? And what should we feed them for breakfast?
Okay. We used to think that breakfast is, this hee-ho-ha about breakfast is something people just want to do because it's a driven force by the companies. But actually, it's not so. I would not agree 100%. It's a very simple example that I can give you. Say, from here, you want to go to JB and your car takes 100 ringgit full petrol. But you decided to pay 30 ringgit. Will you reach your destination? No. Now, glucose is only made from the food you eat. And the food you eat is carbs. Early morning, when you have carbohydrate, a protein, and sometimes some fruit. Like, for example, people say, can I give nasi lemak? Actually, what is wrong with the nasi lemak? Go back to originals of nasi lemak. Rice, egg, ikan bilis, cucumber. Correct or not? The portion was small. Now only it's become big. So yes, breakfast is important. The type of breakfast is important. If you take in the morning sweetened stuffs and fried foods and all that, oh, God help you by 11 o'clock. The child cannot concentrate. And I did this test with my own daughter because she challenged me and I challenged her back. I said, okay, let's do this. She likes donuts. So she took this donut and coffee and then she told me I'm having a headache. I said, okay, good. Let them experience it. What type of breakfast you give will depend on what you have. For example, many people eat noodles, dim sum, thosai, idli, it's all fine. But you don't give the child 10 idlis la. You know what I'm talking about. That child can only take 2 idli. They say, you eat some more. How? Lunchtime. Until lunchtime, you have to survive. Eat some more. Cannot la. You must say, okay, are you done? Yes, I'm done. Fine. Now, eat like a king in a day. Normally, we'll calculate your calories roughly. So, about 1,008 normally for women. 2,002 for men, calories. But you need to distribute it well. However, these calories can be distributed. Some people distribute it 3 main meals, 2 snacks. Can. Some people, 6 meals. But the question is, everything must get into the 1,800 calorie. Simply, la, you earn 1,000 ringgit. Make sure you spend and live within 1,000 ringgit. La. Nowadays, you can go to our Nutrition Society of Malaysia, their website. They tell you approximately how many calories. For example, if you're 1,500 calories, so you took lunch char kway teow, that's already 450, right? So somebody told me, Naman, I eat that and then dinner I will eat vegetarian. So what was the vegetarian I asked you ate? I ate 6 wade. Hello? 6 wade means it's vegetarian fried. 6 wades, you know, don't play. It's quite a high snack and times 6. So you must really think. I'm a person who do not advocate don't eat meat. I think you should eat it in small portion. So look at the choices that you have and decide. But once in a while, they'll ask you for that not so good ones. You just say, today you can have lah. Next week only it'll come. But the moment you don't say that, you are in trouble. My daughter always says, oh, yo, don't look at my mother's fridge. Nothing called chocolate, sweets, nothing. It's all fruits, low-fat milk. You know, she'll go on like that. But today she tells me, thank God you put all these things. So they will learn it later. That time they won't learn it. Sometimes let them fall and let them understand. That's how I do it with food.
This is an edited recording of the panel session at the recent BFM Health and Living Junior 2017 event.
There's another question from the floor. Is it possible for a child as early as 3 years old to develop emotional eating? I have a nephew. His weight is normal, but then starting from 3 years old, he got a brother, a little brother. So, you know, people keeps on scolding at him and then maybe gives him some food just to make him quiet. Because he's 5 years old right now, so he's already under the obese category. He's doing some exercise, which is good for him, but then it causes stress to the other family members. And then when people gives him food, it makes him quiet. So do you think that can actually become a reinforcing factor to him to have a perception that eating is something good? It makes people like him, so...
I think Katiana should answer that.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I would like to say that children that young are not conscious of things like isolation and all the emotional stuff. You think that's stuff that people deal with when they're teenagers. But we are diagnosing things like depression and anxiety in children 3 and 5 years old. So it is happening. Kids are a lot more intelligent. They're a lot more aware. And so in your nephew's case, for instance, even without going down the rabbit hole and figuring out whether he's got any emotional issues, he has already learned at 3 to 5 that there is a connection between eating and attention, eating and comfort, eating and security. Because possibly with the arrival of the new sibling, the attention is only devoted to him with food being introduced or with a certain type of food being introduced. So even if he's too young to understand the bigger picture, he's already able to build that bridge together. And so he might use eating as a way of getting attention from people, demanding food so that someone actually, you know, looks to him. Or he could be using it in a way of making himself feel secure, because that is how, you know, when he's eating, there's people around him, he's associated that link. And so it is heartbreaking because he's too young to be able to make these drastic changes to his lifestyle on his own. And so it is very important for the people in his life to be able to understand that this is a very, very slippery slope that we've put him on. And even though this is a very quick temporary solution in that, yeah, give him some cookies, he's going to sit quietly over there, I can focus on other things, we are opening him up to a whole basket of other risks and medical issues for this temporary solution. Can he be having emotional eating, or is he binge eating? Clinically, he might be able to meet some of the criteria, but even without looking diagnostically, it is something that you should be able to rectify at this stage.
Maybe I have a suggestion. Send the parents to a clinical psychologist.
Yeah, I've got a few at my hospital.
No, I'm sorry. You need to send them, because I think the child is still young.
Yeah.
And the mother and father need to know what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And it helps. It helps.
Because that's the thing. Children are very much, they're victims of circumstance.
Exactly.
They are very much at the mercy of what you do for them and what you introduce to them. And I can empathize with your family, with your parents and your sibling and your sister, because this is something that the parents of my patients often tell me, especially when they've had a new baby in the family. We don't have enough hours in the day, and this child is demanding so much attention. I give him the iPad, I give him the candy bar. It's a human reaction. But at the same time, we have to also remember that these little people have nowhere to turn to but you. You are the sole guide for them to grow up and become a functional human being. I've actually had parents say to me, don't they know that it's bad for you? Why would they eat it when they know it's bad for you? Your kid is 4. He thinks dirt is good for him, you know? Like, you can't expect your child to make conscious, healthy, logical, responsible decisions. In a less drastic way, yes. I think that the parents should come in, have a chat with someone, have a chat with someone about the risks that they're putting their child on. And I think we've talked quite at length about the types of risks we're opening our children up to with obesity. And we're looking at asthma, we're looking at diabetes, we're looking at high blood pressure, all kinds of stuff down the line. And if I want to take it one notch further, illnesses, chronic illnesses in children has actually been linked to psychological illnesses in adulthood. That's the new area that it's bunking into. So children who are overweight, children who are asthmatic, children who are diabetic are now coming with a higher risk of depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, all when they get into adolescence. It's just the tip of the iceberg that we're seeing now with overweight children.
We'll take one more question from that corner.
Hi, my name is Anne. I believe truly that children shouldn't be exposed to food that has been enhanced unnaturally. I see a lot of new mothers who are very concerned about their baby's health, right? So they give them all this natural food and all that. But when they reach the age of 2 or 2.5, when they are ready for solids, the mothers that will walk past my shop and say, no, they're done with healthy food. Why is the Malaysian parents think that only baby from 6 months to 2 years old should eat healthily? But then after 2 years old, they are fine to eat rubbish.
I think the important part everybody knows is until 2 years. That's the window of the importance. So they really emphasize. By the time, you know, I notice when the child is 2 years old, the mother is already expecting the second one. Usually that's the trend. Otherwise it may not be. So then they have to look after the second one. But I think they find that after 2 years, the child is already on a safe level, can eat adult food. So can have whatever the adult self. That's maybe one of the concepts that I've noticed. Number two, I just want to let you know one more thing before I forget. A couple of children that I handle, because children are very difficult, as you would agree, to lose weight. So I do a diet history and find out what exactly the child is eating. And I build a contract with the kids that you can only eat this from now until your standard 6, which means you control what they're eating now. That means they cannot top up anything. And you find when they're standard 6, they will start, by the time they reach standard 6, because they've controlled the food that they love, but they have not added anything, they start losing weight. One more thing I add on is, I said, you must go and play a sports. That's the deal. So they agree with that. So when you manage children with obesity, the concept of it is very different compared to adults. If I control what they're eating and I tell them you cannot top up anything, but you must play a sport, it somehow works better. Yeah.
Okay, I'm afraid we've run out of time. And like all good things, this session too must come to an end. I'd like you to join me in thanking our speakers in the usual manner.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.